Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. It's a Wednesday, and we're excited because we're going to continue our series of broadcasts with Maureen Santora. She's an education advocate who has been our guest for numerous weeks, and it's really a pleasure to have Maureen back with us again. We were talking about the subject of education with her. She has been a teacher for many years, a long time. In any event, she points out that in society today, or we point out that, everything seems to be divided into right and left politics. It really does. It's difficult to have conversations with people who are on the opposite side of the political divide, and that includes people you love and people you know. Maureen, who is, I point out, an education advocate, believes that we need to rethink where we're heading how the conversation is evolving for young people in order for them to be successful in life. She points out that in today's world, where we have some really genuine problems and big issues, we have to get back to some sense of normality where we can have conversations and end the conversation by saying, I agree to disagree with you, but not be mad at them. You know what I mean? There should be some things in our society that are not susceptible to that division, and she believes education is definitely one of them. She's been a really powerful advocate for education her entire life. And the Christopher Santora Educational Scholarship Fund, which she founded, has awarded more than $500,000 in scholarships to New York City's elementary, middle school, and high school students. The scholarship fund was founded in honor of her son, a New York firefighter who perished after the events of 9/11. And anyway, she points out being an American was always about being concerned for the next generation, and she thinks we're not trying to educate young people to know they can pursue a variety of possibilities, which they should. As Maureen said, when we had dinner every night, we'd have debates, and her son was always on the opposite side of his sisters. And the reason a person goes to college is to open up their mind. It doesn't necessarily get you a job or guarantee you a job, but enables you to see a different vision and things that you've never, ever thought about. Maureen points out critical thinking is something that should be started in kindergarten. Critical thinking is something essential to your development as a human being, and you need a whole variety of situations in order to survive in the world. She has been teaching, as I pointed out, since 1967, but she says parents are still the primary educators of their children, and they do indeed have the right to be involved and to empower themselves to be actively involved in their children's education. We have to be brave enough to speak out, even if the opinion we possess is not the popular opinion, according to our guest, Maureen Santora. Maureen is located in Long Island City, New York. She's a lifelong resident of that area, and it is a real delight to have her back with us today. I love talking to Maureen. She has so much wisdom to share with us. Maureen, welcome. Nice to have you back again on a rainy day in New York. How are you?
Hi, Doug. It's good to be back. It's good to be talking to you as well, and it's just a blustery day, as Winnie the Pooh would say, just a blustery, windy, the rain is beginning to stop, but it's just, you know, one of those days when we just have to find a rainbow somewhere to cheer us up.
Yeah, and I feel sorry for you because you had your spring wardrobe out and now you had to go back and wear something warmer, right? The spring has not arrived yet.
Not arrived
right?
yet, and the poor flowers are, you know, in disarray because they've come out and now they're freezing and they're going to go back and they're wilting, and it's very sad to see this, but it is what it is, you know. We have to accept what we cannot change, you know.
Well, anyway. Let me just get to the subject here we're talking about. There are many things I could talk to you about, but we're talking, focusing on education. And as you point out, the best place to start fixing some of these things is education, and it begins actually in kindergarten. And there's so much going on these days in the subject of education, you know, with the problems and the outbursts we're reading about and hearing about and watching on television going on at school board meetings around the country, and all this issue going on over what's happening down at the Disney company, and you know what's going on there over what people are complaining about, and it involves education of children. There's a lot to talk about. So I just wondered, let me ask you a few questions. What really is on your mind today, the most important thing you think we ought to talk about? I have a nice list of questions here.
You know, I was, you know, very disturbed by Disney and their stand because children don't have these attitudes or feelings or analysis of, you know, what's going on. They look at the magic and the glamour and parents take their children there for the magic and the glamour and the pretend, you know. And so I'm very sad that, you know, they've taken a political stand. And I thought maybe we could talk a little bit, you know, from a child's perspective on heroes and villains and what a hero is. Now, for a very young child, heroes are fictional characters, Superman, Spider-Man, Hulk, the prince that saves the princess, you know, those are the heroes. And the villains are all the mean characters, the mean people, you know. And, you know, for young children, that's really where it's at. When you get into older kids, you know, middle school and you know, upper elementary, most kids, you know, when you ask them, and I've had conversations with kids many times about this because I was interested in what they perceived the hero to be. And I always, you know, thought initially that they would pick out, you know, superstars and they would pick out, you know, celebrities, but they don't. Middle school kids and upper elementary school kids pick their parents as their heroes because they've helped them, and they pick out, you know, schoolmasters or, you know, religious, you know, individuals. And that surprised me a lot, but I was very pleased to hear this, that's who they thought their heroes were. And, of course, the villains for, you know, the middle age are the bullies and the mean friends and the ones who make fun of others. So those are the villains in their lives. Now, when you get into high school, that changes a little bit, and kids become a little more sophisticated, I guess. But their heroes are the people who, the adults who support and help, so firefighters, police officers, and, anybody who is in a position where they are a help person in an emergency, so ambulance drivers and so forth. And they also include parents and grandparents and teachers as their heroes. Now, the villains for the high school kids are those who cause harm to others. So they are knowledgeable enough to know about some world leaders. So Putin comes up and Hitler comes up and Mussolini comes up, you know, because they're learning history and they see, you know, what a real, real villain is. But I've always wondered, how do parents and how do adults define heroes? Oftentimes, you know, when you're, you know, listening to a sports show, you know, somebody would say, oh, that's my hero because this was the guy who won the game or this was the guy, you know. And that is not necessarily a hero. So as adults and as, you know, educators and as people who want to help children understand who the heroes and the villains are in our world, we need to help kids understand a proper definition, you know. And I often think, you know, that those in the limelight, for example, recently last week there was a father and a son who owned a pizza place in, I think it was in the Bronx, and a lady outside their store was being mugged. And they ran out of the store, and of course the mugger started to attack them, and they got injured. But their attitude when they were speaking was, how could we not go out and help this lady? She did
right.
nothing. She was walking on the street, and they left their store, and they ran out. Now, that, for me, is the definition of a hero, because if you are able to take yourself out of the me and go into somebody else to help them without necessarily thinking about your safety, you're a hero. For the people who jump on the subway platform for somebody who's fallen in, that's a hero. And I don't know a single hero that I've met in my life, and I've met many, who have ever said, oh, I'm a hero, look at what I did. They always say, how could I not do this? This is what I needed to do. So that's the message that we want to send to our kids, to make them empowered, make them feel strong. You know, when they see a bully in the classroom, or they see somebody making fun, be powerful enough inside yourself to be able to step up and say, that's not nice, you're being mean, stop that. Even though others may not agree with you, you are protecting somebody else for no other reason than it's the right thing to do. And that's what I hope, you know, our society will tend to begin to focus on, you know. All these fluffy people, you know, who are powerful and they have money and they're, you know, they do dastardly things, you know, I'm always forgiven. Well, that's the wrong message. You know, you think of, you know, Will Smith last week, and I didn't see the show, but I certainly saw it multiple times on the news. What he did was unacceptable. And now he, you know, left the academy. Well, that's good for him doing that. But if he's not going to be, you know, punished in some way, and I don't mean, you know,
yeah.
he needs to go to jail, and I don't mean, you know, that he needs, you know, to be hit or whatever. I mean that in some way he needs to be accountable for doing something that is so totally unacceptable in a public forum, you know, that, you know, other people don't say, well, listen, he's rich and he has money, so therefore it's okay for him to do this. You know, and I see this a lot on a lot of, you know, news, you know, that if you're very powerful and you're very wealthy and you, you know, have a lot of, you know, power in over other people, you tend to be forgiven for your, you know, bad habits or
your
bad
misdeeds.
Behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
And misdeeds,
yeah.
Yes, that's the right word, misdeeds. And so my hope is, you know, that I see everything in life as a teaching moment. I see everything, you know, so this is a teaching moment because we've had several incidences recently, you know, that have shown the ugly side. And so we need to capitalize that and have conversations with our kids, because I'm sure that most middle school kids and certainly high school kids have seen this clip of Will Smith. We need to have a conversation about how this is unacceptable. You know, and we have an increase in guns and we have an increase in, you know, shootings and all of this. Well, that all stems from the fact that if you're unhappy with somebody, it's perfectly okay to hurt them. Well, it's not. It's not. And so we have to be very, you know, diligent, and we have to be people who speak out and say, you know, solve a problem with your words. Solve a problem with arbitration. Don't solve a problem by beating up somebody or hitting somebody or even worse, taking a gun and shooting somebody because they said something that you didn't like. And I think as adults, we have the responsibility to make that happen.
It is unconscionable that that could have happened the way it did. And, you know, and I've worked on, personally, I've worked on a number of Academy Award broadcasts. And I see something like that happen. I just cannot believe him getting away with that, you know, without an outcry. It's shocking that that happened.
Well, worse,
but, and then, you know,
publicly
30
apologized.
Minutes later, get up and be cheered for getting your an Academy Award.
Correct.
It's really strange, just strange.
Yeah. And,
who knows what's going to happen there?
And he never apologized. I don't know.
No, well,
either.
He did
and
a day
know,
later.
I'm
he didn't that night. Yeah, he did to Chris Rock a day later. But
yeah.
To go up and belt somebody on live television in the middle of the Academy Awards, how the hell do you do that and get away with it?
And you know, especially he laughed at the joke, and so did his wife. And then, you know, with an ugly face, he got up. I guess he had to. And whatever happens in his personal life is none of my business, and I really don't, you know, care about that. But this was a public forum. And, you know, we see this, you know, in sports. You know, we see people going after other people. Well, these are the public figures that we need to educate our children are not the good guys. You know, they have, you know, anger problems, and we need to find a way to teach our children to handle anger in a civilized manner. Now, everybody gets angry, and everybody gets upset, and everybody has the right to be, you know, disturbed if somebody's being mean or kind, but you don't need to go to the next level, and you don't need to allow your children to say, hey, that's all right, you can beat him up because he did this or this or this. You need to help your children have some kind of conversations. My son was, you know, he was a character, and he was somebody who, you know, would be annoying and aggravating, you know, to other friends, and they'd be ready, you know, just punch him in the face, and he'd tell a joke, and that was the end of the disagreement, because the joke made everybody laugh, and that diffused the situation. It was a terrific, terrific technique that he used, and he never had a fight with anybody, never. And I'd often say, you know, gee, Christopher, you know, you need to be careful. You know, these kids are bigger than you, and oh, don't worry, Mom, I'll take care of it, and you know what I mean? And then they would all end up being friends. But his ability to diffuse the situation in a non-threatening way was not only very successful, but it was very clever as well. And so we need to teach our kids, because they're seeing, you know, this anger, and I think, it, you know, as these children grow up, this is what they'll know, that this is how to handle situations. And I think this is very, very damaging, and I think it's something that should be, you know, spoken out loud and clear, and it's not being so. So that, of course, leaves it to the teachers and to the parents to have these conversations of saying, you know, he, you know, was angry, you know, he was upset, but he didn't have the right to do this. And these are the reasons he didn't have the right to do this, and you know, go on and have a conversation. And I'm always a big believer that you need to talk to your children on a regular basis about all sorts of things. That's what parents, that's part of their job, you know. And you know, creating a kinder world doesn't happen because you say, well, we're going to be kinder. It happens because of your deeds and your actions, and kids watch your actions a whole lot more than they watch or listen to your language, you know what I mean? And sometimes language can be very hurtful, and certainly, you know, it can do a lot of damage. But if they see aggressive behavior, that's what they're going to emulate. And, you know, I just feel this is just unbelievable, unbelievable.
You're right. Let me ask you just offhand your opinion or your thoughts about all these issues that are confronting the Disney company, you know, right now. It's in the headlines every day about their objections to the Florida, what is known as the Parental Rights Bill, which is really the name of it, the Parental Rights Bill.
That's correct.
Know, which means teachers should not be doing any kind of sexual gender identity education or discussion with kids, you know, in the first, second, and third grades. You never dealt with any issues like that when you were teaching, did you?
No.
Of course not.
No. Well, that's the age group that I'm the most expert on. That's the group of kids that I spent the bulk of my teaching career educating. And I can tell you from the thousands of kids that I have taught that little children don't have gender issues. They don't differentiate. Now, they know that they're boys and they know that they're girls, but they cross gender activities on a regular basis, and nobody thinks anything about this. Now all of a sudden we have to watch, you know, if Johnny wants to go and he wants to play with the girls and recess, and Frank wants to play with, or Mary wants to play with the boys, all of a sudden that's an alarming thing, but it's not. Little kids don't have this. And so what, you know, DeSantis did was absolutely educationally sound, and right on the money, because little kids don't have these issues. Now, if there are parents that are super sensitive or they're, you know, interested in I don't know what, that's on them. That's not on the kids. I don't know any kids. And as I said, I've taught thousands. They don't care. There are no boy games and girl games. When you get older, that becomes an issue. When you, you know, begin to play sports and you are now today, you know, that's all out the window too. But, you know, what he did is absolutely right on point. And I'm very angry at all of the news that have been touting this as the Don't Say Gay Bill, because it's not the Don't Say Gay Bill. It is the parents, and it is the parents who are responsible for educating their children regarding sexual identity, sexual matters. And the schools can support this. And there are classes in every single school in the United States that teach sex education. And they do that to equalize the information and provide academic information to the kids. These classes, and I've been trained in this, and I taught this in upper grades, and I taught it in lower grades. I was one of the primary teachers when this first came into New York City. But there's a different tone when you are older than when you are younger. So he's absolutely correct. And for Disney to now make this a gender issue at a park where kids don't care, they absolutely don't care, is outrageous. And I'm sad to say I've been a very, very big proponent. I've gone to Disney maybe 50 or 60 times with my children and my grandchildren. I'll not be going there again. I won't be going there again until they change their attitudes, because this is not a political issue in the Disney World park. This is a place where people create magic, where kids have, you know, the ability to fantasize, and kids have, you know, all the stories. You know, are we going to now eliminate the word princess and prince now, because that's, you know, a gender-based, you know, this is just a terrible, terrible path that the company has taken. And I hate to say it, but I hope that they take a big hit on this, because for parents to spend the amount of money that they do in Disney World, which is sizable, and to go to a park where you can't say boys and girls, is really very, very unbelievable.
It's unreal.
In my opinion.
It's unreal.
It's just unbelievable.
And, you know, it's not. You're not alone. There are lots of people, the reports of lots of people who are condemning Disney and saying they're never going to go back to a Disney park again. And, you know, it could really come back and hurt them. And many people feel that.
Well, I hope it does
exactly what should happen.
That'll help them to change.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It'll help them to kind of see that the majority of our citizenry is not interested in this. You know, and certainly, to be truthful, there are children who possess more female hormones in a male body and more male hormones in a female body. There are definitely those children, and I'm not condemning them, and I never, you know, and I've had kids, you know, in upper grades, you know, who seem to have tendencies, but it was not, you know, it was never made mention of. It was not important. It was not, it was just, you know, this is how you feel, and this is good for you, and we went on, and nobody in any of the classrooms that I taught ever made fun of such a person or ridiculed such a person. I wouldn't allow any of that. So I just think this is, you know, this is a small group who has a very big voice, and we need to step on that big voice, because it is harming our children and it is harming our society. And I think this is outrageous, absolutely outrageous. So I won't be going back there again. And I'm very sorry that they chose to create this wonderful, magical place, and now it's become a political place. And that's not what kids want. That's not what they want. That's not what parents want.
I think you have a lot of people who totally agree with you. What, tell to me a little bit about when you were actively teaching, how willing were you to listen to parents or to allow parents to come into a classroom, you know, to observe what's being taught to their kids?
I
how do you feel about that?
Well, I had an open classroom. In the beginning of the year, and this was well before they now have meetings in the schools, in a lot of schools where they have like an evening at the beginning of September where parents come in and the teacher gives the overview of the thing. But I did this before this was acceptable, and I would write to the parents and would say we'll have a lunch meeting, and anybody who wants to come can come, and if you can't come, if you want to speak to me in the early morning or whatever, I will speak to you. I believed in my heart and soul that the parents and I were partners in their children's education. So I had an open classroom. I told parents to come, and anytime they wanted, we had seats in the back of my classroom. They were welcome to come. I had many, many parents come in my room and help me and volunteer because they had a great time, and they saw their child. And, when you have a child, especially, who has difficulties, who is having a hard time adjusting to school life or in a classroom or for whatever, maybe academically, but not only that, socially, the best message you can give is have the parents come up and watch the kid in action. You don't have to say a single word. You don't have to convince that parent because he sees for himself. I had everybody's work up, good or bad. I didn't put only the best work up. I would say to the parents, come and see. So if their child was not doing well, they saw it for themselves, and they saw, the top work, and they saw the worst work. And changes were made, and we worked as a team. I still have contacts with parents many, many years later after their kids have gotten out of school who remember, it wasn't so in every classroom, but in my classroom, I felt that we were partners and that anything that, I needed to have them help me with, in order for me to do that, they had to understand what was happening and what we were doing and what my mission was and what my goals were. And I was for the children, 1,000%. And, in the case of parents who, if you have to tell, a parent that your child is struggling in some way, parents get defensive. If you have to tell a parent that, their child is misbehaving, parents get defensive. But if they've seen it for themselves, they have nothing to say but to agree with you, and then you work as a team, as a tandem team.
Exactly.
And so I did that for my whole career. And now it's become more popular, but my attitude was that the parents were the primary educators. I was there to teach the specifics. I was knowledgeable on the specifics, on how you get from A to B. I could teach, the math and the meeting, and I could do all of that. But the rest of the stuff, parents had to help me with. They had to help me with the personalities. They had to help me with, how to handle anger or sadness or, a whole variety of emotions. And we worked as a team. And so parents were open to me. They spoke to me. I didn't have a problem. In my career, I think there was one family, and I can say that, with certainty, that had a problem with me being the teacher. And, of course, the child had some very serious, very, very, very serious emotional problems. But we worked together, and I was able to get him, positioned where he would be successful. And they ended up solving the problem by taking him out of the school district and moving somewhere else. But that was unfortunate. But he won, out of 12,000, I guess, Yes.
Don't mean to interrupt you, my dear. I love hearing your thoughts and what you sound like such a great teacher, and I really agree. The parents and the teachers should be partners together in their education. But listen, we've run out of time again. You are a gem to talk to. I thank you so much for being with us. Our guest has been Marine Santora. She'll be back again next week, and if you would like to donate to the Christopher Santora Educational Scholarship Fund, go to that website, Christopher Santora Educational Scholarship Fund. Thanks, Maureen.
Broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Boy, do we ever. I'm Doug Llewellyn. Thanks again to Maureen Santoro in Long Island, New York. Have a great day, everybody. Bye.